Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Non-Diet Yogi Podcast, where we explore yoga, earth-based living, and gentle nutrition through a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Casey Conroy, non-diet dietitian, naturopath in training, and yoga teacher. And this is episode 11, Wildly Accessible Food and Medicine, Foraging Edible Weeds and Bush Foods with Pat Collins. I'm recording this in the middle of May, and in Australia, that means it's autumn, and I've been foraging lots of weeds, herbal medicines, bush foods, nearly every day. Just yesterday evening, my husband took me to a spot where he had found some stinging nettle, and for the first time in my life, I harvested nettle, which is a herb I really rely on at this time of year to manage pollen allergies that I experience. So yeah, it was really cool to find stinging nettle because now I can just dry and use that instead of having to buy it. These kinds of weeds and herbal medicines that we are all able to find, depending on where we live, but many of us are able to forage weeds and foods and medicines. And they're a really wonderful supplement, at least for me, to what I grow in the garden. And sometimes what I forage provides far more than what I grow. I'm still a pretty beginner permaculture-y kind of experimenter. To me, wild foraging is a great equalizer. It's a form of social justice, a way to access nutrient-dense foods, which I'm all about, of course, being a nutritionist, but a way to access these foods for free. Foraging is just accessible. It's a way of learning which local and freely available foods can nourish you that doesn't require the kind of privilege that buying a $15, you know, superfood smoothie does in inner city Brisbane or Sydney or Melbourne. Organic greens, as another example, cost more than any other item of fresh produce on a weight-by-weight basis. This is because they don't transport well and they need refrigeration, which all costs money. Foraging is also accessible in the sense that you don't need a car to drive to a supermarket. For many of us, you need only duck out for a walk. Sometimes you need only take a few steps out your back door if you are lucky enough to have that kind of unmowed backyard. Foraging is inclusive. People in lower socioeconomic brackets can and do forage edible greens and weeds all the time. When I was a student nutritionist dietitian working in public health, I spent time with African populations, with Burmese populations, and these folks would just forage greens, not just grow them in their yards, but actually pick the weeds that were growing around their veggie gardens, and they knew which ones to pick. So, you know, these folks have a disadvantage in terms of their socioeconomic bracket, and yet they were able to access that kind of nutrient-dense food. You know, people of color, people of all body shapes and sizes, women, trans and gender non-conforming folks, all these kinds of marginalized groups of people can access weeds, edible weeds, without fear of judgment. They wouldn't necessarily experience that freedom walking into Mrs. Flannery's or a health food shop. People who've been oppressed, who have experienced violence and trauma, can access edible weeds. And I really like this. I've got to say, though, you do require a certain level of privilege to access edible foods that are growing around you. You need knowledge of what weeds and foods you can pick. You need access to areas with clean water and no chemical or nuclear contamination. And you need the physical ability to get to the weeds, to the foods. But this is a far more basic level than is needed to walk into your typical health food store or your juice bar. and purchase a packet of frozen acai berries, the food miles of which I won't even get started on. On an individual health level, edible weeds pack a nutritional punch. I've touched on this, but dandelion, which does grow around here, is one of the most nutritious plant foods available. It has double the iron and double the vitamin A of kale. And I just found out yesterday that nettle, which I mentioned we've just found, is one of the highest plant-based sources of iron ever. So that's pretty amazing, I think, for a kind of unsexy, prickly plant that you normally avoid and at least need gloves to harvest. You can benefit from edible weeds and foraging foods in other ways. You know, the exercise that you get whilst going for a pre-dinner walk to find those greens, the sunshine and the fresh air that you get to experience, and the connection with nature all factor in. Foraging is also a way to understand landscape and seasons. For me, it affects the way that I place myself in my surroundings. It increases my awareness of where I am. It kind of builds this sense of belonging to the land rather than the land belonging to us. And it certainly widens our lens from just sticking to shopping in a supermarket. Diogo Bonetto, who is a famous Australian forager, edible weeds man, says that foraging is engaging with the land. It's communion with space. And an acai smoothie just doesn't do this. I know I keep picking on acai smoothies, but it's a pretty easy target. Another bonus about foraging wild foods is that no agriculture is required. And in regenerative agriculture systems, weeds are actually recognized as restoring soil quality. No food miles are necessary. And when you're saving money, when you're walking along, breathing in beautiful fresh air and getting sunshine and connecting with plants, you kind of can't help but feel good. I know that when I'm out foraging, I just feel so in the zone and so connected with the natural world. And it just really allows me to get out of my head. I get excited about going and finding chickweed and finding or discovering new bush foods and figuring out what I can do with them and how we can replace items on our weekly grocery list by, say, making jam out of Illawarra plums, which we've just picked a bunch of, instead of, you know, buying jam, which is pretty easy actually to make. So anyway, this is an interview with Pat Collins. And in this interview, we talk about a bunch of stuff. We talk about being able to support our children's health by making at-home remedies, and how this actually motivated Pat into studying herbal medicine formally. Pat also discusses why familiarity with the abundance of edible foods around us and how to harvest and use them is so valuable, especially at this time in history with COVID and that kind of thing going on. She talks about why she published her book, The Wondrous World of Weeds, and it wasn't because writing books pays well. Once upon a time, we were all wise women, she says, and we go into the need to take back our power by reclaiming our knowledge of foraging. The many uses of chickweed and Paddy's lucerne. We talk about how weeds grow where the soil is right for them and what this tells you about the soil. Herbs in the time of COVID-19, some of Pat's favourite weed allies and ways to use them to support immune and respiratory health, and also to calm our nerves when it all gets too much. We talk about which native Australian bush foods are in season right now and how to use these. So think lemon myrtle cheesecake and bunya nut curry. Yum! We talk about Pat's views on multi-level marketing essential oil companies and concerns about the safety of ingesting essential oils. And she also mentions a couple of more affordable practitioner grade, so high quality alternatives to these brands. We talk about the beauty of using whole herbs as compared to isolated components of plants like essential oils. And we talk about menopause, how Pat views this powerful life stage, helpful plant allies to consider, organ systems to take special care of at this time, and how St. John's wort helped Pat through her surprisingly tumultuous perimenopausal years. So Pat was such a delight to talk to. She's just a really gentle, humble soul, and she's extremely generous with her knowledge. I first met Pat at the Wise Women's Gathering, which is held in New South Wales in Australia every year and has been since 2017. And since meeting her, I've learned so much from this incredible, beautiful, wise woman. In this interview, I actually learned even more. I learned so much from talking to her, and she really ramped up my excitement to get out there and go foraging even more than it was already, which I didn't think was possible. So a quick bio. Pat is an experienced herbalist and owner of the Total Health and Education Centre in Muswellbrook, New South Wales, Australia. She grew up in the bush and on dairy farms. And when her children were young, she completed her Diploma of Herbal Medicine, the first of many natural health qualifications. She has a passion for teaching. Pat has taught herbal medicine in multiple settings, from wise woman gatherings to tertiary level settings, and she has written several books, including the latest, The Wondrous World of Weeds, a beautiful full colour book and guide to foraging edible and medicinal weeds in Australia. When she's not seeing clients, Pat is teaching herbal workshops and bush tucker camps and formulating her own herbal products for clients and students. In this episode, we talk about a couple of things I have written blogs about, and I'll provide links for these in the show notes. So some of those blogs I've written are Chickweed, Medicine and Magic, Ingestion of Essential Oils and the Controversy Around That, and The Call for Wise Old Women. So the Patreon offering for this episode, I've thought about this and I've decided that for this episode I want to offer another giveaway that is open not just to my Patreon subscribers but to everyone, and that is a 60 gram jar of my handmade wildcrafted chickweed salve. So this salve is great for eczema, bites, insect bites, burns, and any kind of skin conditions that are hot and dry and inflammatory. You can enter the draw at patreon.com/nondietyogi. And of course, if you don't win, you can always just buy the salve. I've just made a new batch. I make small batches of this, so stock is limited, but you can find that at funkyforest.com.au/apothecary. So without further ado, here is my interview with the wonderful Pat Collins. Hello, Pat, and welcome to the Non-Diet Yogi podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
No problems. Lovely to be here.
Pat, I first discovered you, I'm pretty sure, at the Wise Women's Gathering. I think it was the very first one in 2017. Were you at that one?
I did go, but I was a speaker in the next one.
Okay. Yeah,
so it might have been the one where I was a speaker.
Okay, so, okay. It was one of them. I know that.
I missed the very first one, I think, and then I came in. That's why I didn't even know about it, and they asked me to come along and be a speaker, and I thought, oh, wow, this sounds fantastic. But it's really sad that we missed it this year, wasn't it?
I know. It's been postponed till 2021, but the lineup looked so good, and, yes, you know, you're obviously part of that. And, I guess I'm just curious to get to know you a bit more. You know, I've got your amazing book, one of many books that you've written, The Wondrous World of Weeds, and in that book, you explain how you've lived on farms and in the bush for most of your life, and you're very passionate about sharing your knowledge. And I'm just wondering if you'd mind giving the listeners a bit of your backstory, how you came to be a herbalist.
Okay. Well, I was brought up on dairy farms, And that's my love, like being in the bush and being on farms and growing things. And even when I was younger, I used to grow plants and grow veggie gardens and things like that. And then as I got older, you know, my parents didn't know what to do with me, so I went to secretarial course and become a receptionist. But our clerical assistant, really. And then I left, and I had children, and we got a little property. And I've always been into self-sufficiency. And when I had the kids when they were little, I just wanted to look after them naturally. I wanted to look after them with nature's gifts and things. And I didn't have the foggiest what to do, because my parents didn't have, you know, like if we were sick, we just stayed in bed until we got better, and that was it. We're on a farm, you know, no time to worry about us. So most of the time, of course, we went to school. But basically, when my kids were little, I thought, I'd just love to learn a bit more. And a friend did a herbal course in Queensland Institute of Natural Science, it was in those days. And they did it was a 6-month workshop, like a course. And I did it, and I thought, wow, I love this, because here I can use chickweed, you know, to look after skin problems. I can put onion on someone's ear, but this is fantastic. So I went on further and did the diploma of herbal medicine, and then I did iridology, and then I kept on going and going and going, as you do. But I was able to look after the kids naturally. They never had to go to doctors or hospitals or anything like that, and it was fantastic. I could look after them. You know, I've got earache, we could put the onion poultice on. I've got a cough, I could put an onion poultice on their chest. I could make ointments, I could make creams, I could make syrups, all sorts of things that we could do. So there was very few things that we had to worry about otherwise. And of course, if they broke their arm or something, I'd be racing off the doctors, of course, to get it done. But we didn't have any of those little troubles, thank goodness. Just the usual burns and diarrheas and coughs and colds and all those sort of things. And you can do it all yourself. You really can. And there's so much out there. And I was asked then by TAFE if I would mind running a course. Teach people about growing plants. Back in those days, anyone could start a course as long as they found 12 people. And I thought, wow, I could show these people how to grow these, how to use the weeds around them and plants and make ointments and creams. And so I made that course, and I actually did that for, maybe 20 years with the TAFE, until TAFE got a bit difficult and wanted, you know, so much more. It just changed, really. And I also did it with outreach for a very long period of time until it closed down up here. And now I do it privately. I did teach at the college. There was a diploma down there, WEA, and I taught manufacturing, because there's not a lot of us manufacturers around, which is rather sad, or ones that want to teach it anyway. So I did for quite a few years, which is really interesting. And now I just teach privately. And, of course, I've written all my books because I want to share my knowledge. And also at the same time, I run a practice, and we have a place called Total Health and Education Centre at Musselbrook here at 196 Bridge Street. And basically in here is where I make my products, and we post them all out, and I look after my clients and so forth.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I'm sure that was just like such a compressed version of everything that you've done. But yeah, I especially love hearing that, you know, you wanted to help your children with natural remedies, because that's been a big reason why I'm, you know, wanting to learn more about plants and
so
foraging.
It really
is. And, you know, I'm a dietitian, so I'm quite embedded in the mainstream medical system, and I have a great respect for that. But you're right. I mean, there's just so many things that we can help with ourselves, you know, the little colds and the sniffles and the burns. And when it comes to broken arms and, you know, that kind of thing, modern medicine just shines. But there's so much that we can do ourselves. And it's very empowering to have the knowledge and the know-how to do that. And on that note, you're so knowledgeable in so many topics, not just weeds, but bush tucker, self-reliance, self-sufficiency. But if we hone in on weeds for now, you know so much about them, you know, eating them, using them as medicine, but also other uses, you know, as dyes and all kinds of things. And as I mentioned, your book, The Wondrous World of Weeds, has just been such a treasure trove to me. I've recommended it to many friends and colleagues. And as I mentioned before we started recording, I had to wrangle my copy back from a friend for this interview. And she's now gone off to order her own copy. So could you tell the listeners, Pat, why familiarity with edible weeds and how to harvest and use them might be so valuable, especially at this time, this point in history?
Okay, so look, these are things that grow everywhere. You know, you've got chickweed in your garden, might have a little bit of nettles, you might have some milk thistle. There's all sorts of things just grow around you, and if you just look in your vegetable garden, you can find them, or you go on a spare block, you can find them. Paddy's loose and pops up everywhere. So, and look, the book I wrote, The Wondrous World of Weeds, I actually wrote another book before then. I actually written quite a few books, and basically they're called, I just wanted people getting back in touch with the earth, and that's what I call my series, In Touch with the Earth. And I wrote another book, a weed book before this one, and it used to have 40 weeds, but it didn't have all the pictures and things. And I think that's awfully important, is identification. And I do run workshops and things particularly so people can identify. We can walk out in the paddock, we can find them, we get them, we collect them, we take them in, and we make products. And I've done this a lot with children's groups as well, and they love it. Because here's something they can do. They can pick the herbs, they can boil it up, and look at that, they got an ointment, they can put on their cat or whatever. So that then Paddy's loose and cough soup tastes yummy, you know. So, you know, they can be quite good that way. There's just so much around us. And this book I wrote, all the other books are self-published, but this book, The Wondrous World of Weeds, I actually published with a publisher because I wanted it out there more. And I could not afford to do all those colour pictures. There's over 300 colour pictures in that book, and I could not afford to have done them I asked them to do it. Could they do it under $30? And they did it for $29.99. That is a really good price for that book. And I was so pleased they were able to do it. And look, we set it all out. My son helped me with the pictures and everything. He did a fantastic job because he enhanced areas with the computer, so he made it look really good. And we got that all done, and I sent it into the publisher, and I think, oh gosh, they're going to chop this, chop that, and condense it and everything to do a damn thing. I thought, what am I paying these people for? Because really, if you're writing your own book, you don't get bugger all out of it. So don't ever think you're going to make money that way. But basically, I put it out there because I wanted people to know about weeds and stop poisoning them. Always remember one guy, he came to one of my earlier workshops, Demon, in 30 years ago, whatever it was, and he used to poison dandelions, he used to go around with the wand, poison them all the time. Now, he came back and did the course again, and he was giving all these dandelions away, so, you know, because he didn't poison them anymore, because he understood what to do with them. I'll tell you another very good case that I did too. I had another lady. She came to my workshops, one of the ones I remember very well, because she used to do my workshops through TAFE, and I taught her how to look after her children, and she had four little kids, and they're always at the doctors and always sick and all running noses and every problem she had. She told me years later that she never took them to the doctor since she did the workshop with me. So, you know, she sticks bunion poultices on, and she boils up weeds, and she does all sorts of things, and is able to look after naturally. Now, isn't this what you want to hear? You know, that you can do these things. This is information we should know. This is information we've lost. So once upon a time, we were all wise women, and we understood what was in our garden. We've let it go. We've given it to the pharmacist, the doctor. We've got to take that knowledge back.
Oh, yes. I love everything you just said. And I love foraging and going out and harvesting wild weeds because, as you said to me, it's accessible. It's something that we all used to do. And it's only been very recently that we've outsourced that to pharmacies and doctors. And to me, it really is accessible, inclusive food and medicine in its original sense. I mean, we don't need to drop, whether it's, you know, a big heap of money on a doctor's bill or even to drop $200 a week on superfoods in a health food store, you know, or go out and buy organic spinach that only lasts for 3 days in the fridge, when we can just step outside into nature and find these powerful and nutritious foods that we call weeds for free.
Look, a good example would be chickweed. Chickweed is a really easy little plant to find around the place, especially now it's getting cooler. It's always very, very noticeable because it's got a little tiny white star-like flower. And when you look at the stem, it's got little tiny hairs down one side of the stem and not on the other side. It grows along the ground. So, you know, there's a lot of plants like it. But chickweed is a wonderful little plant. Do not get it mixed up with ones like radium weed where you break open, it's got white sap. Beware of white sap. So basically, if you're worried about it, definitely get good pictures. Well, that's why we do things like the books, and certainly you can go on the internet these days. But chickweed, you can use for so many things. You can use it just like you would lettuce. So you can pick it, make a beautiful salad with it. I always put it in my salads every day. Chop up the tops of it. Don't get those long stringy bits. Just the tops of it. Chop them up, put them with cucumber and carrot, whatever else you like. That can be the base of your salad. You can also make soups with it. It's great in soups and things like that. It also makes a fantastic ointment. You can boil it up with olive oil and put beeswax with it and make it into a lovely ointment for eczemas and itches and all those sort of things. And bites from mosquitoes and things. So lots of things you can do with this beautiful plant, and it grows in your garden. And the thing is with weeds, they grow where the soil is right for them. So they're growing where that nutrients is that they need and they can use, or they can put back into the soil. Often weeds will tell you what is wrong with your soil. So for instance, dock will grow where there's high iron. So this is a high iron plant. So, you know, that gives you an indication. And so you know what to put back into your soil when you see these sort of plants growing. So you can get so much information from weeds. And, you know, chickweed is just one little example. Look at lovely Paddy's Lucerne. Paddy's Lucerne, which grows everywhere, is a really tough one called ironweed, really hard to pull out of the ground. Cedar over in India, they love it. They use it for everything. It's such a beautiful plant. And we grow it and we poison it and we chop it down and we get cranky with it and learn to love it. And it makes the best cough syrup. And kids will love it, and because it's just full of sugar, you know, and cough syrup is really tasty. So, but also it's very good for your stomach and really good for reflux. I love it for children for reflux. So lots of things that we can do with these plants. And it's just a matter of learning.
Yeah,
look at that dandelion flower. Think of that dandelion flower, how beautiful it is. You know, they're just lovely to have around as well.
Oh, I've been loving the resurgence of chickweed lately. Just I'm making a second batch of ointment right now, and my husband just adores it because around this time of year, and it's funny how plants grow at the time of year when, you know, we sort of start developing conditions where we need those plants. Around this time of year, he starts to get some eczema and some itchy, flaky skin around his nose. And this chickweed ointment, which we've made from just weeds that grow around us, he puts it on his face and immediately feels that coolness and that soothing, action. And I just love it when plants work so obviously and so swiftly. It's a real testament to just how generous and incredible these plants are.
Yeah, they're nature's gifts, aren't they? Some people will say God's gifts, you know. Like we've got to look into these plants and say, well, what are, like you say, they grow where they're needed. You know, plantain growing on the side of the road, so good for lung problems. You know, like chickweed growing at this time of the year when we get this dry skin conditions. It's just, you know, you'll see this over and over again with nature. Listen to her. Be in touch with her. You know, we've got too far away. We've stepped away. Let's get back in touch, especially now that we're all, you know, stuck in the houses and all the rest of it. We can spend a little bit more time in looking at what's out in that garden, even if it's just got a backyard. It's amazing what you can find.
And talking about being stuck at home and given the current situation with COVID, I'm just wondering, Pat, if any particular weed allies come to mind that could be helpful and supportive for, you know, immune health respiratory health, nervous system.
Definitely plantain for a start. Mm. Plantain is a number one, very, very common plant. Grows all over the world. And you can find the greater plantain or the lanceolata one, which is a thinner one. And you can find these all over the place. They grow in beside roads. They grow in gardens, all sorts of places. Saying that, plantain doesn't grow at our place. Native plantain did, so I had to go and plant some. But the, didn't hear that. The plant's sharing wheeze. Anyway, it's a brilliant lung herb. And it's a very, very good lymphatic herb. It can be used for so many purposes. I put it in my, for instance, chickweed ointment. I would put plantain with that too because I love it for skin. But it is very specific lung-building herb. So there's an easy one for everyone to get onto, put it in their juices, make teas with it. Another herb that's out at the moment is goldenrod. And goldenrod is a weed that grows around the place. Not everyone's got goldenrod growing around. But if you have got it in your area, this is another beautiful respiratory herb as well. And then, of course, you're looking, what can you do emotionally wise? Because, you know, like it's all getting a bit much and it's really difficult. But if you can get onto Californian poppy, which is a weed, and you can grow it in your garden, that's a beautiful calming herb that you can use. Another very interesting one is prickly lettuce. It grows upwards and it has a, it's where lettuce has probably come from in the beginning. It has got a prickly underside under the leaves and on the stem. That's actually an opium substitute. It doesn't give you a hit like opium, of course, but you can use the white sap, which is bitter and horrible. But basically, you can drink that and it has a very strong calming action. And I used to have some of my my people on my workshops and they used to go out and they'd pick the leaves and they said, oh, there's a couple of leaves for breakfast and I was calm for the rest of the day. So there you go, you know. So the beliefs are a good thing too, I think. So,
yeah. Oh, wow, that's beautiful and so much. There's that, just what you said, there's so much support for people, especially right now, right there. Pat, I know that, you know, you make a lot of your herbal medicines and now you sell them as well, which is wonderful. And I'm just wondering, you know, you've mentioned chickweed sal, but what are some of your favourite herbal medicines to make, maybe based on what's around right now?
Well, Paddy's Loosen, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Paddy's Loosen cough syrup is really good. Also, I've been making a lot of garlic syrup. I know it's not a weed, but garlic is actually quite, you know, at the end of the season now, so it's a good time to be able to source it. And, you know, we're using a lot of garlic syrup at the moment, everyone building up their immune systems and helping with their lungs and so forth. Another good one, I do make a wild weed ointment, and I'm using all the different weeds that are around at the moment. Mm-hmm. Another very good one to do, and that's like a cure-all. We use it for psoriasis and all sorts of things, hemorrhoids, or various things. In other words, don't know what else to do, use the wild weed ointment or the cream if you don't like the ointment. And then there's a blackberry nightshade, and blackberry is not deadly because deadly doesn't grow around this area. So blackberry nightshades, they're very edible when they're blackberries, and make beautiful jam and they're quite nice eating. You can make a lovely ointment out of that, and it's really good for herpes of any type. Shingles as well, which is another herpes infection. So all sorts of things you can do with blackberry. Of course, chickweed. We do make chickweed ointments and things like that. And where the plants start to die down, for instance, my comfrey would die down at the moment, so I'll be making things with comfrey and things like that as well. I do make, we do capsules, we do syrups, I do ointments, I do creams, lots of teas. Don't underestimate tea. It's a good thing to do. It's gentle and works really well. I've got a tea called tonic tea, and tonic tea is made from the nettles that grow around at the moment. It's made from dandelions. Mm-hmm. So it looks after different areas of our body. It uses clivers. Clivers is like a sticky where it grows up all over the place, and that's just popping up at the moment. So, and I use peppermint for flavouring, and that's a real good pick-me-up sort of tea that I use a great deal of. So that's a nice one that you can grow from your plants around. I do have a, and I'd use bush tucker too, you know, like, so I love a, I have got a ginger and lemon, lemon myrtle and ginger it's called. So it's made lovely lemon myrtle tree, which is a great antiseptic tree. And it's a great one to use for winter with some ginger in it. It's a really nice, so if you've got that growing, get that going and start drinking that tea on a really regular basis. It's a really nice one. So all sorts of things that we can do like that.
Oh, yes. Oh, there's just so much around, not just now, but I guess in all the seasons. And it's a matter of getting to know what herbal allies are around. Yep. Pat, you mentioned bush tucker a little while ago in this conversation. And, you know, of course, in addition to your vast weed expertise, you also have a vast knowledge of the many plants eaten and used by Australia's first people. I think somewhere along the lines I've read that you talk about bunya nuts and illawarra plum pine, which a friend just recently introduced to me. And in your pre-conference workshop listed for the Wise Women's Gathering that's now postponed till next year, you were planning to share how early colonisers survived using some of these bush foods and obtained that knowledge from the traditional owners of the land, and even how to use bush spices in cooking. And it just sounded so wonderful. And I'm disappointed there won't be a Wise Women's Gathering this year. But, you know, I'm just wondering what other bush foods are in season right now, natives, and how can we use what's around?
Okay, well, normally this time of year, well, probably a little bit earlier, end of March I normally do, I have a bush camp at our place, but I've also, this year, we were doing it for the for a group that I'm vice president in, that's Indigenous Plants for Health Association, mm-hmm. and I was doing a workshop for them because I thought that would be good and that all the profits would go to them. But of course, COVID came along. I mean, I missed it by 1 week, would you believe it? But COVID came along, we couldn't do it. So we have actually postponed that until probably September, October. So we will do it. And that's just to introduce people to the plants and talk about the plants that grow around, including weeds, because to me, that's part of it. What the weeds are that grow around us. For instance, our nettles are native nettles that we grow around. Purslane would have been another one. So in the good time I like doing it is in the autumn, because there's a lot more plants in the autumn. For instance, your bunya nuts are available in that time. Your lily pillies, got lovely lily pillies out then. You've got your sandpaper figs and things. So the drought put a real spare in the works with all those poor things. But basically there is a lot of more plants. Kurrajong seeds I like using and grinding up and making a nice alternative coffee. So wattle seed, of course, is great to use, though you have to use specific wattle seeds that are around. I do like mountain pepper. That's a good favourite of mine to put in for flavouring, as well as the native tomatoes, but they don't grow around this area. But I do collect my illawarra plums, and I've only just collected them. It wasn't a very good season for them this year because of the drought, but I've done some in the past. I made some beautiful jams, which are really nice. They're sort of a sweet, savoury sort of jam that you can put on with your kangaroo or whatever, quite tasty sort of plant that you can use that way. So I really like my illawarra plums. They're growing really well and producing a lot. I use lemon myrtle a lot. Lemon myrtle cheesecake, you've got to have some of that. Always make that up for the can. But basically, you can make lovely teas and things as long as you've got some of that. And there's other myrtles too. There's the aniseed myrtle and cinnamon myrtle, one of those ones. And they give nice flavours as well. So we've got lots of things in the bush. I wrote a book called Bushwise. With a CD, that's one in one of my in my series, In Touch with the Earth. My husband's on the front because he looks more bushy than I do. But basically, you know, I teach people how to get fires going, all those sort of wonderful little things. But I love bush cooking. It's fun. It's I love being out in the bush. And, you know, we make a bush ointment, and the bush ointment would have things like sticky hop bush, which is a really good herb that I use. It grows up in the hills. bracken you can actually use. It's quite good. Nettles. I did pop in Paddy's Loosen because it's been around here for so long, long before probably white man came. So basically, there's lots of things that you've got around you that you can use and make use of. And of course, the women's gathering, I wanted people to be open and understand these and make a little bit of bunny nut curry or whatever. So have a little taste, something like that. So that's the way that you learn, by having fun and enjoying and getting out there and learning about this beautiful country. One of the reasons I joined the Indigenous Plants for Health Association is because I wanted to learn more about what we could do, and also to find out the medicinal uses of the plants and make use of them, you know, make it into so that we could sell these products and the first Australians could actually help harvest them and things like that. So we've got all those sort of things that we're working with there as well. So if you're interested in that area, just check us out. We're on the website. Okay.
I'm going to check that out straight after this, Pat, and probably rush out and buy a copy of Bushwides too. That all just sounds so, so wonderful. And it really gives me this feeling of connecting back to the land, of really engaging with the land and communing with the space that we're in. And everything that you've been talking about facilitates that, whereas, you know, getting your organic spinach is, you know, that's fine, but going into a health food shop and just buying it, or buying an acai smoothie, you know, you just don't get that connection with land from doing that kind of thing. So I'm going to change gears a little bit, Pat, still on the topic of herbal medicine, but I'm just wondering about your views on essential oils and specifically multi-level marketed essential oil companies. This is a controversial topic of interest to me, and I'm curious about your views as a herbalist and plant expert on, I guess, the quality of some of these oils from these companies, and also this tendency that I've observed for many distributors to hand out information on some of these oils that's not always accurate and potentially not safe. So for example, ingesting oils, I've come across some really kind of sketchy advice around ingesting pretty large quantities of essential oils or on a very regular basis. So I'm just wondering what your views are on that.
Oh, look, it's a real thing with me about ingesting oils, because they are strong and they can be poisonous. You know, like I have to get, you know, like handfuls of, you know, like thyme for one drop of essential oil. I remember one lady, she said, oh, her kid had a cold. She said, oh, well, she had some people there at the time. And she said, oh, look, I'll put a few drops of essential oil of thyme into the bath with my kid. And she put quite a few drops in. The kid was jumped out screaming. You know, like you've got to be safe with these. The beauty of with the herbs is you can be very safe. I like the fact that people like to use essential oils because they feel that they're self-medicating, they're looking after themselves, it's something they can do. And I think essential oils have a fantastic place, but they have to be treated with care. And look, I had one lady, she said she went on to, oh, I can't remember which distributor, it doesn't matter. But basically it was a machine you could go onto and it would tell you which essential oils you needed for your sickness. So she put a drop of this and drop of this and a drop of this all in one capsule and swallowed it. Now she has extensive burns all down the front of her throat. I put it in a picture in one of my newsletters one time because one of my clients gave it to me. She was so upset about this poor lady. This is what you can't do, you know, and the essential oils should only be given out by aromatherapists, really. So, you know, for those sort of things. So if people cannot treat things with care, what's going to happen is we're going to lose that ability to use them like that. Because, I mean, they're wanting to stop this herb and they want to stop that herb, and they've actually, you know, like we can't, for instance, you can't use comfrey, you can't use borage, you can't use coltswort. There's all these ones that have been banned for internal use and things, and yet we're allowed to ingest, you know, essential oils, which are so strong. You can give them to kids and things. You know, and if we don't have a responsibility with it, it's so wrong. Look, these companies that you know, we know all these companies, Young Living, Material, there's a lot of them like that. They have very good quality oils. I'm not pretending they don't. They are good quality oils, but I don't like their marketing, their level marketing, because the person at the top always gets the money from the people who've been selling it. They're so expensive, and people spend so much money on them. They're beautiful essential oils, and if you want to spend that money on it, that's fantastic. Go ahead and do it, and because they are good, but do treat them with care. And I suppose one good thing about spending a lot of money on essential oils, you probably won't have to do it. You think, oh my God, this is too expensive, I better use one drop. So I suppose that's a good thing, isn't it? So, but to put in creams and things like that, it's too dear. Mm-hmm. So I buy mine BP quality, which is British Pharmacopeia quality. Mm-hmm. I would buy them from some place like Sydney Essential Oil Company or New Directions. And they're often coming, some of them are coming from overseas. And the other companies would say, hey, they can be a mixture of it, but they're quite adequate for creams and things. Because like I say, you have to be, you know, you can't go and spend all this money and put it in a cream. Cream costs through the earth. Mm-hmm. And no one will be able to buy it. So, and I do like essential oils, but just remember, I'm putting in a cream, and a massive cream, I'm putting a few teaspoons of essential oil in a cream that would make, you know, 20 bottles, big bottles. So, you know, like, you're not getting bugger all cream when you rub it on. So, and you only need a tiny bit. And we do get so much by rubbing on the skin. Don't underestimate how good it is to rub something on the skin, but don't put it on direct, put it with some other carrier oil. There are some really good people out there that are really good with their essential oils, and like aromatherapists and things, and we need to have those people guiding us more, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I agree with everything that you've just said. And I just think, you know, these are very powerful substances, essential oils, you know, and we need to treat them with respect and with care and with knowledge of how to properly use them. Pat, we're coming towards the end of this interview, and one more thing I would like to ask you about is menopause, actually. Because a lot of the women I see who are, you know, middle-aged women experience menopause symptoms in sometimes a very severe way. You know, I think it's something like 85% of women at some point will suffer from hot flushes and vaginal dryness and just that emotional roller coaster during menopause. And then on top of it all, women are told that their risk of heart disease and osteoporosis is rising. And then I also know some women, and I'm not of age yet, I haven't reached that stage of my life yet, but I do know of some women who seem to sail through menopause and come out the other side stronger and wiser and full of vitality. I once taught a series of yoga classes for elderly, it was chair yoga, elderly people in a medical center. I remember one woman who, she was the oldest one there. She would have probably been in her early 90s, and she just had this sparkle to her eye. And when I asked her about this, she just said, oh, what menopause? There was nothing, you know, it was fine. I just sailed through it. And I know that in the last decade, you know, more women have woken up to the power that menopause can bring. And some of the most beautiful and intelligent and luscious women I know are either perimenopausal, in the middle of it, or past it. And I'm just wondering, Pat, how do you view this powerful life stage, and what maybe are some of your favorite plant allies to support women at this stage?
Okay. So, menopause, very interesting little time. So, because I've been through it, so quite 15 years ago, I think it was. So I certainly know all the ups and downs, because I thought, oh, when I get to menopause, oh, I'll be right, I've got all these herbs, I'll fix myself. And it was terrible. I was hot flushes and dryness and very tearful and all these sort of things. I thought, well, this is a good learning curve, isn't it? Mm. I found one of my best allies was St. John's Wort.
Oh, okay.
And St. John's Wort, because of the emotional And it's a lot to do with the emotional ups and downs. And like you said, those beautiful women that get through those golden years and have no problems, and have a look at their mentality and how they're thinking, and nobody cares about anything, you know, that sort of thing, where these people that are very, oh my goodness, you know, worry, anxiety and all that sort of thing, and they always have it much worse. So it is a lot to do with emotions, and it's interesting. Even I've used reflexology and hypnotherapy, and people have gone through it easier. So it's all, there's a lot to it, tremendous lot to it. It's not just, it's about your head as much as about your hormones. And you know, just call it a disease and give us HRT. What the heavens do we think of things? And still many people, women, believe that they're not, you know, they'll just age and it'll be dreadful if they don't have HRT, and their skin will go dreadful, and they'll just look old, and that they'll lose their hormones. And I mean, do you give young hormones into an older person? It's just not right, you know. The herb withania is another very good herb. It really helps. Ashwagandha is another name for it. Another herb that will actually help you get through this area really nicely. Of course, we know things like black cohosh. I like chaste tree up to menopause. And when you get into menopause, I prefer that black cohosh is a better choice. They're ones that we've used I've often used. I've always supported the liver. Liver is very important. But the big one to support is the adrenals. And it's probably because your adrenals are going to take over the work once the ovaries aren't working anymore. So, and what isn't a good adrenal herb? Withania. Another very good one is licorice. True licorice, none of that Daryl Lee stuff. True licorice is beautiful, and it will help us get through. As Romania, radiola. There's some beautiful herbs out there that we can use. But just think of withania and licorice alone, and that's really good. Of course, we cannot use licorice if we have got high blood pressure medication. So there's some, particularly there's other herbs like Romani you could use instead. But basically, they will help a lot. But you do have to look after your liver. Your liver does process hormones. And also another organ to think about is your thyroid, because your thyroid is your sister organ to your adrenals. And if you think about your adrenals, you get up and go, and they're affected very much by stress, anxiety, our lifestyle. And so therefore your adrenals are really going to be, a lot of people just push them to the limits. You know, we live on our cortisol. And I know that was one of my big problems, that I live on my cortisol. And one of the reasons that I had a bit of trouble. So by adding a little bit of iodine, I find that was useful as well. But again, methane is a herb for the thyroid as well, so which is an interesting little thing. So supporting the liver, supporting the thyroid, supporting the adrenals, but supporting the emotions. That's the most important thing. And knowing that you still are special, that you still have got a use. You know, like it's like, oh well, we're finished making babies now, so what use are we? Well, we're good grandmas too, aren't we? So and we have so much more that we can offer and give, and in fact so much more, because we don't have that worries of children and bringing them up and looking after them and how caring for them. So it's really important. I think it's a beautiful time that we should cherish. No pulling and bleeding. How good is that? It's so fantastic when I finish with that. So that was, you know, it's just how people see it. You know, like we're sad to say our society is, we look at people that look good and got young and got nice skin, and we want to make our skin look younger, and we don't want to have grey hair, do we? You know, how many people don't let their hair go grey like I have? Because it's, you know, like it makes us look old, and what's wrong with looking old? What's wrong with being a wise woman? Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful to be a wise woman. We need that respect. And perhaps if we got a bit more respect for our elders, I think they would have a lot less trouble with menopause. I think that's part of their problems.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, we live in a society that really worships worships youth, and that's really to our detriment. I mean, in the last couple of years, maybe since entering my mothering years, I've had this very strong desire to find elders and wise women, and just this kind of feeling of, oh gosh, where are they? I need them, and I know other people
hiding.
Maybe hiding, and I I'd love to see them come out of the shadows, because we need them as a society, as you know, menstruating women, elders, and postmenopausal women have such gifts to share, I think. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Pat, for speaking to that. Pat, we're gonna come to a close soon, but I'm just wondering, before we do, what work are you currently doing, and are there any courses or things that you're running that you'd like to let folks know about?
Normally I would tell you I'm doing this workshop, doing that workshop, and of course everything's stopped. And we're not quite sure when New South Wales is going to allow us. I mean, this Friday I think we're allowed to have two people come to your house, which is very nice. So everything's been put on hold. But we will, you know, hopefully, at least by spring anyway, that we will have some more workshops going. Look, the best thing to do is get onto my website. My website's www.patcollins.com.au. So it's quite easy. And if you get on there, you'll see that we have a newsletter. I have briefs, which I put out every week, and we put out a newsletter every two months, which actually says the workshops we're going to do and what we're going to carry out and so forth. And all the other things that we do, and also gives you an outline of the products. Like I say, it doesn't say anything what we can use them for. It's just the outline of the products that I make myself. But it'll give you some information, and of course all of my books, which I'm more than happy to spread around, because I think it's great to get this knowledge to everybody.
It really is. Pat, thank you so very much. I feel so inspired to go out and forage weeds even more now. I've been doing it every day with another herby friend, my friend Hannah. But I just feel really inspired now to go out and to share this information with my friends and my family, and just help others discover the benefits of connecting with nature in this way. There's just so much to be learned and appreciated, when we go out and actually touch and befriend the herbs and the weeds. So thank you.
No problems at all.
Thank you for being here and for straddling the tricky edges of yoga land and diet culture with me. I hope this podcast encourages you to compassionately and continuously question the ways that contemporary yoga is unfolding and interacting with other big forces in the world, to develop a discerning mind and open heart, and to skillfully dodge the diet BS that often comes along with studio culture. Like you, I'm eager to keep learning and sharing, and I put all relevant links in the show notes. You can find my blog, online nutrition counselling services, and lots more at funkyforest.com.au. While you're there, make sure to download my free ebook, A Modern Yogi's BS-Free Guide to Wellbeing. It's a light-hearted, easy read with my top 6 tips on dodging diet culture crap in the yoga world, whilst creating sustainable and balanced health from the inside out. If you love the podcast, please consider supporting my work at patreon.com/non-diet yogi. There are some pretty rad rewards there, such as exclusive content, discount codes, giveaways, and the ability to chat with me. As more episodes roll out, I'll be adding even more fun bonuses, such as my non-diet yogi cookbook and mini courses. You can access most of the goodies at the lowest level, which is just $2 US a month, or around $2.90 Australian dollars. Like most mamas, I'm ridiculously busy parenting, working, studying, and all the rest. I've recorded a bunch of episodes, and some of these have required 5 separate takes just to get a whole episode done, as I need to wake up before my little ones to do it, and they get up very early. So I'm crossing my fingers that the Patreon will give me the financial capacity to keep doing this. Another way to support is to head over to iTunes and subscribe and review the podcast. That would be so awesome. Thank you. The in and outro song is Evening Glow by John Anderson. Thank you so much for being here. Until next time.